Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk a little about bean leaf beetles, and we are going to answer a whole bunch of your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag. We've gotten so many questions in here, especially over the weekend. We're going to get to those right away in the show today. Before we do, I guess I'll just give you a quick update on our own farm and just talk about planting in general. It's just so funny because I just look at the last 5 years as pretty wet springs, five in a row pretty well, and now we're dealing with one of the drier springs we've had in 10 years. Well, let's see, the 2012 and 2014 were pretty dry also. But it's been a little while, so it's a refreshing change to be able to just get lots of acres planted in a hurry and be done early. So we've been doing some tiling this spring. We've been doing some other jobs besides planting. Just about done on our farm. Just got some newer ground that we're working on a little bit with some dirt work and tiling, and otherwise we'll finish up. But it's actually been a fun spring for once, so that's really pretty nice. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
Got a question from Jim in Western New York. He said, we've got nothing planted so far in terms of corn and soybeans. We've got 15 days in the long range forecast of below 50 degree temps. Our soil is drying out, so we could start to plant. It's supposed to snow this weekend and be a low of 28 on Friday night. Just wonder if you guys, man, talk about doom and gloom here. Come on, Jim. He said, just wonder if
that's
you guys.
Doom and gloom. That's great. That's exactly what said, I want. Get snow on your crop and it's going to yield well.
All right. He said, wonder if you guys would plant in the Dakotas or if you think I'm crazy trying to plant out here in dry dirt. We're working on the irrigation system, and we'll be in and out of the truck, so look forward to hearing what your response is.
Okay, so the biggest thing that we're looking for, obviously you're past the first crop insurance date. You need seed that's going to germinate well at cold temperatures. So as long as your cold germ is okay, absolutely we would plant. There's no question about that. Now, unfortunately, no seed company puts the cold germ on their tag, so you're going to have to talk to whoever your seed provider is and say, tell me how this did on cold germ. Otherwise, we'd always encourage you bring your seed in early, like let's call it December or maybe January. Send a sample in of every lot that you want to plant early into cold temperatures and find out what the cold germ is. On corn, we like the saturated or cold saturated germination test. On soybeans, just the regular cold germination test. But either way, as long as you have good cold germ, a good cold germ score, and you use a good seed treatment, you're going to be just fine. I just went out right before the radio show and looked at some of our corn that we planted when the soil temp was around 50 degrees, but we knew that the next day it was going to drop to about 34 degrees, and then it remained in the 30s. This is no joke. Planted corn, soil temp remained in the 30s for several days after planting. Corn looks great. So no problems at all. Don't get too worried about it.
But again, you got to be prepared. You got to have seed that has a good cold germ score, and you've got to have a great seed treatment and possibly even in furrow. So a lot of this corn that we put in the ground early, we put some stuff in furrow too, put additional fungicide, insecticide, and so forth to keep it
and
safe.
Fertilizer. Yep.
All right. Thanks for the question. Let's get to the phone lines. We've got Tony with us in Minnesota. Tony, how are you?
Oh, not too bad. Trying to finish up corn today.
Excellent.
I wanted to call and remind everybody how fast accidents can happen. Last Friday, I was walking around my tractor and just inspecting everything out in the field, checking seed depth, everything. Walking past, and fertilizer hose came off a pump, and I got hit with 32% at about 100 PSI in the chest.
Oh, my goodness.
I tore a little skin off and went to the doctor, but everything's okay. But just to remind everybody, you don't know when something's going to happen. And I wasn't touching nothing, just walking past.
So next time, Tony, the advice is wear a flak jacket when you're inspecting your tractor?
Yeah, I think so. It's crazy. Definitely have sunglasses on, I'll tell you that.
Well, I will say we talk all the time about personal protective equipment and using all the safeties. And when you're inspecting a lot of things, if possible, have stuff shut off so there's just less risk out there. But yeah, I totally get it. Accidents can happen. And I mean, that, you know, farming is one of the riskiest professions out there. So we need to do everything we can to reduce the risk. We appreciate you calling in and reminding everybody that.
You're right, though, Tony. We do kind of take it for granted. When everything's working fine, it's absolutely safe being around everything, right? But we think about how much pressure we're using in a lot of these things, and stuff can definitely go wrong. There's no question.
And let me tell you, 32% on open skin doesn't feel good.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I believe it. Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm sure glad you're okay, Tony. That's a scary thing.
Absolutely, but just remind everybody, don't take anything for granted, that's for sure, when you're out there.
Hey, now you said you're finishing up planting corn. Have you planted any beans at all yet?
No, I'm going to go all corn this year
in
my part of the world, and having good luck with that. And no, we're just going to finish up today with all of our planting.
You know, there have been a lot of strategies out there. I've heard some guys say, I'm just going to focus on what I'm good at and try to get the most bushels. I've heard other people trying to outguess the market. And in most cases, we're hearing guys shifting to more soybeans. But I'm also hearing some guys saying, I'm planting more corn because it sounds like everybody else is going more beans. So it'd be interesting to see how it turns out.
Absolutely, yeah. Conditions are great. And listening to Brian, of course, it's time to plant when they're this good, that's for sure.
Yeah, so, if we've got good soil conditions, that makes a lot of difference.
Yeah, yep. But it is cooling off, that's for sure. But I thank you guys, and just remind everybody to be safe out there.
Will do. Thank you so much, Tony. Really appreciate that. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there, no doubt about it, to watch out for. Marty's got a question here on leafy spurge. He said he's used Tordon in the spring, but he's always been advised to spray after it blooms. But he's wondering, is that too late?
No way. Yes. Don't do it after it blooms. Do it as soon as you possibly can. We want to kill that plant before it gets into the reproductive stages.
And what rate does it take
of
Tordon to actually kill the plant? If you're spraying a patch.
Well, it all depends. I mean, what I would advise guys to do is use a quart per acre in those patches, and then it does phenomenally well, and it will leave years of residual.
Leafy spurge is a really tough weed. Yeah, don't mess around with that. Use the Tordon and spray it early. I totally agree with Brian on that one. We're going to talk about bean leaf beetles and some insects and soybeans on today's program. Stay tuned.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic fungicides from Atticus LLC. Fungal diseases can be devastating, but Acadia, Slant, and Talaris 4.5F from Atticus deliver lasting, broad-spectrum fungi control so your soybeans, sugar beets, and dry beans can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone. I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree. In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for Heads Up Seed Treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPhD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Our topic is beanleaf beetles. And this is one of those bugs that can start off, the first generation anyway, very early in the season. And we get a lot of questions about, all right, hey, I put an insecticide on with my seed treatment. How is that going to work on controlling an early season pest like a beanleaf beetle? So we got our friend AJ Holman with us right now with Bayer. AJ, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Darren. Appreciate the time.
All right. Growers are making a significant investment in seed treatment this year, no doubt about it. And in soybeans, we've got a neonic right in that seed treatment. How well do we control these early season pests like beanleaf beetles?
Well, pretty well. I mean, with Acceleron, the specific seed treatment or insecticide that we're using within our portfolio is imidacloprid. And with imidacloprid, we have labeled control against seed corn maggot, soybean aphids, and as well as beanleaf beetles. So, you know, when you look at an efficacy standpoint, we're looking at up to 30 days and some days beyond of really helping control that pest and ensuring that the soybean crop gets off to as healthy as a start as possible.
You know, when you think about that, that bug is going to try and take a bite out of a cotyledon or an early leaf, and it's going to ingest that imidacloprid. So we've got some systemic movement here with that insecticide. And as that plant grows bigger, like you said, you've got probably a 30-day window there of really good control. That's going to cover most of these first-generation bean leaf beetles that we see out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do want to be clear that we are talking about early season beanleaf beetles as they can really cause damage throughout the entire growing season. But again, it's really about ensuring that we get that crop off as to a healthy as a start as possible, as that when that soybean, you know, especially in those early, early stages, is going to be most susceptible to disease and in this case, insect feeding. So ensuring that we can protect that and kind of provide that barrier of sorts around that will help ensure that we're going to maximize our yield potential and put more grain in the bin at the end of the day.
Well, that's the big deal. And you know, you mentioned you've got multiple generations here of beanleaf beetles. So if we can wipe that first one out, we're less likely to have that second one coming up later on, which is a good thing. And, you know, you mentioned the other thing there is disease control. And I think that's something, too, where a lot of growers that we talk to think, well, you know, I don't have a Pythium problem or a Phytophthora problem. I'm not so concerned about disease. But they're forgetting that you're getting disease protection for that window as well.
Well, yeah, and I think it really comes down to unpredictability, right? You know, early in the season, we don't know what Mother Nature is going to throw our way. I mean, maybe we'll have a significant year from disease. I hope not, you know, or maybe it's insects and beanleaf beetles that are going to create some havoc for us this year. And so ensuring that we've got a quality seed treatment like Acceleron, you know, having insecticides, fungicides, but also maybe nematicides and other bioenhancers can really ensure that we are protecting that large investment that the cost of seed is and ensuring that it gets off to, again, one of the best starts as possible.
Great stuff. Talking with AJ Holman with Bayer. AJ, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Thanks for the time.
We've got Jeff with us now over in Indiana, talking a little about cover crop on bean fields. Jeff, how are you doing today?
How are you all?
We're doing well. We're doing well, Jeff. Starting to get a little sprinkle outside, which is great. We could use the moisture.
Well, we could send you just a little. I think we're going to get sprinkles all week.
I bet you could. Well, unfortunately, yeah. We can't take that. But how's that impacting getting the spraying done? So for cover crop out in the beans, are guys able to get stuff sprayed out?
There is some that have sprayed out. My particular question is on some, we haven't burned ours down yet. We planted 160 acres of beans 2 weeks ago today.
Okay.
And we planted them in 30-inch rows between our old corn rows. And so we had a little bit of, I can't tell you the volume, of mat put on a few days later.
Okay.
And now the cover crop's starting to green up.
So, and what's in the cover crop mix?
We have cereal rye in this case and barley at about a 10 pound of each. And then there was oats, but it's gone. And there's just a shade of clover, not much. And otherwise, we're pretty clean, just a nickel's worth of chickweed out here.
Okay.
And the soil temperature today is about 65 at 2 inches. So this stuff's starting to perk up and come on. My concern would be, say we spray this within a week or 10 days, if we can't get out, depending on the weather, how much of the nutrients that we put down, for instance, with the fertilizer spreaders is going to be, and I'll use the word gone, nothing's ever really gone, I suppose, compared to if we let this stuff, if we killed it today, for instance, and had it melt down. The beans aren't up just yet. They're just starting to neck through in some places.
Okay, so first of all, this is no-till?
This is no-till,
okay.
Yes, sir.
So the MAP, was that injected, or I assume that was just laid in the soil surface?
Just broadcast.
Okay, okay. So almost none of that's going to get used this year. It takes forever for phosphorus to get down into the soil. So in terms of using that, that's not going to happen. In terms of using what was in the soil, that is happening today as soon as it started greening up. So it's going to come back potentially even this year, but at some point in the future, because nothing's leaving the field with that cover crop. So it's not like you're losing any total nutrients. What you're losing is short-term, right now, the nutrients that would be available early in the season to that bean crop. So that's why we worry a lot about letting a cover crop go beyond emergence. Typically, what we would say is go plant it, and then as soon as the weather's good enough to spray, you know, before emergence, we would usually encourage a guy to terminate the cover crop before emergence. Now, sometimes there are reasons to let it go after. So, for example, if let's say it was light soil that sometimes it blows so hard in your region that it literally takes that sand and cuts the plants off, well, in those cases, then we'll tell guys, okay, let the cover crop grow just a little bit and then terminate it. But like in your case in Indiana, I would assume there's no big reason why we would need to hold on to it any longer. So I would just think that if it was me, I would want to terminate it pretty quickly. What type of soybeans are we dealing with here? Enlist, Extend, Roundups? What are they?
These are going to be these are Extend beans.
Great.
And we're just, our problem is for the next, I mean, we've got sun today, but for the next several days, we're highs in the mid-50s at best. Tomorrow, actually, in the mid-40s. So,
yeah. Yep.
Sucking it up is a problem to us a little bit.
Yep, I agree with that 100%. You will not get the type of control that you're after if that weather is going to be down in the 40s and 50s. And it's really not a lot better for us here where we farm. Now, last week, we had way above normal temps. It was fantastic. So all week last week, that would have been good for us. But yeah, it's same kind of deal for you. If I had to go out and the temperature's in the 50s, I'd say, yeah, my odds are not good.
Okay.
So I'd wait until it's warmed up, maybe for a day, and then a day or two after that, then go hit it. And obviously, you know, Roundup's going to kill off any rye, barley, any remnants of oats, and probably even the clover. If there's any clover that ends up being left later on, you know, Extend would kill it, or you could throw the, you know, Extendamax or Ingenia in right away if you want to. I mean, you have that option.
Yeah, the plan would be to put some Roundup with an Anthemax in early on here.
Okay.
To get the Zidua.
Yes. Yep. You get the Zidua, and then you get the Cadet out there along with the Roundup, and that's all going to be just fine. I just make sure you keep your Roundup rate up, because that's what's going to kill off the rye, the barley, the oats, and quite frankly, the clover too, because Cadet's
clover.
Pretty weak on the clover as well. So yeah, just make sure you're keeping that Roundup rate up, and you know, I'd be running at least 32 ounces of 6-pound Roundup if it was me. You know, if not even 44, just keep that rate up, because you're going to have a lot of stuff to kill. One of the biggest problems we have when you got a thick cover crop out there is just getting penetration, getting the coverage. And so that's why a lot of times we say hit it early, because there will usually be some stragglers a little later on.
Yeah, we're planted in rows, so we should have pretty good shot at getting it. I mean, the cover crop is planted in rows. It's not sown.
Oh, okay.
And so... Okay. But I appreciate what you're saying. Get her covered.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Jeff, thanks for the call, and
thanks.
Good luck this spring.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
You bet. Thanks. Yeah, that whole cover crop thing, I mean, there are lots of advantages to cover crops. Darren and I were just talking about this on our farm the other day. But, you know, there are also some drawbacks, and that's what we worry about. So here Jeff's in a spot where he wants to get this cover crop terminated. Well, the temperature isn't real good. So in the Dakotas, we run into another issue, and that is sucking up our early season moisture. In a year like this year, where it's been dry, I'm not super worried about drought, but in our region, you always have to worry about drought. So we like to terminate our cover crops in the fall. Anyway, we'll get back to more of your questions, and we're going to talk about bean leaf beetles coming up right after this here on Ag PhD Radio.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's Dual React Control System. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Our topic is bean leaf beetles, and you may think, what? Bean leaf beetles, they're not so tough. Well, they can certainly cause some damage out there, and they can spread some disease, so certainly a bug that you don't want to have out in your soybean fields. Real happy to have Jeff Whitworth with us right now with Kansas State University. Jeff, how are you doing this morning?
Actually, pretty good. We had a heck of a storm go through here this morning with lots of pea-sized hail and golf ball and tennis ball-sized hail, and got a lot of tree and limb damage, and I hate to think what it did to the crops. A little too early to assess that, but we had 50, 60-mile-an-hour winds and hail. So, yeah, unusual. I guess not. It's that time of year, right?
No, it's going to come. And you know, it's funny I just was talking to somebody this morning. I said, man, we're going to catch some rain. At least I'm not worried about hail right now because most farmers don't have any crop up in South Dakota. Not the case necessarily where you're at. But we're talking about bugs today, and certainly hail would do a number on them as well. But looking at bean leaf beetles, oftentimes you see them getting a start in other crops and moving into soybean fields. What do you see in your area with bean leaf beetles?
Well, that's interesting because I was just out looking. We're just now starting to get to planting soybeans or finishing up corn planting, and I was just looking at some early planted beans that had just germinated Friday last week, and the leaves are riddled with bean leaf beetle feeding. Bean leaf beetles overwinter as adults. And they overwinter in wherever they can, but in CRP, but a lot of times they'll be in alfalfa fields and they get under the canopy and they get under the residue down at the base of the plant. And then in the late winter, early spring, as it starts to warm up, they'll become active. Now, actually feed a little bit on alfalfa. They really don't do any damage, but the thing that's always amazed me about the adult alfalfa or the adult bean leaf beetle is how they can detect those very early germinating soybean plants. I mean, even volunteer plants in a cornfield, they can find them out in the middle of a field, and they flock there and they start riddling them. The problem is if those beans come up and there's a lot of overwintering adults around, they can flock to those. Usually it's just the border rows or the outside rows, but they can really do a number on those little cotyledons and those little leaves. The bean leaf beetle, the kind of characteristic is the oval or round-shaped hole in the leaves. They're not all like that, of course, but that's kind of the characteristic. The beetle itself is very shy. So if you're out looking at those early plants, a lot of times the adults, if they're there, they'll be on the underneath side of the leaf, or they'll just drop on the ground and become motionless for a little while, and they're really pretty difficult to see. There's two different color phases. There's a tan and a reddish-pink color phase, but they both, either color phase, they have six black spots and a black border. So they really, they blend in pretty well with the soil. But if you're starting to see, oh, you know, five or six bean leaf beetles per row foot, and they're really chewing a lot of the early seedlings, you may consider a spot treatment. Really and truly, most of the time they don't go out into the field. It's just on those borders as they come from the surrounding overwintering sites. And that's the first generation. And they're laying eggs. That generation, after they feed a little bit, they lay eggs, and they lay those eggs in the soil around the base of those plants. And what a lot of people don't realize, those larval bean leaf beetles feed on the root hairs and the roots of the soybean plants, just like corn rootworm larvae feed on the roots of corn plants. So a lot of times if you have a spot out in the field or a spot along in the border that the plants just don't look quite like they're keeping up with the rest of the field, they're just maybe look like they're a little more stressed. I always tell guys to go out and pull up some of those plants, and if they have those white worms on them, that's a bean leaf beetle larva. They look just like a corn rootworm. Or to me, they look just like corn rootworm larvae.
I agree. I know what you're talking about, Jeff. I remember, I was fairly young when I was digging up soybeans, and I asked that question too. I'm like, man, are there corn rootworm larvae that are feeding on these soybeans? I thought the same thing. And then I realized, oh, okay, it's bean leaf beetle larvae. So you're right. I don't think we get really any questions about that as far as what are these worms that are feeding on soybean roots. And I'm not sure why people don't ask that question if they just aren't digging enough, but we certainly need to. I've been talking with Jeff Whitworth here at Kansas State, and if you missed the first comments that Jeff made, they had a pretty nasty storm with a lot of wind and some hail. Jeff, our thoughts go out to all the folks down in Kansas right now. Hopefully the storm damage wasn't widespread. Hopefully it wasn't as bad as it could be, but we're all thinking of you, and thanks a lot for being on the show today.
Sure, anytime. Have a great day.
Bet, you too. Let's head up to South Dakota State. We've got Adam Verenhorst with us right now. Adam, we're talking about bean leaf beetles. I think Jeff set the table pretty well. We've got some bugs that overwinter as adults. And we were talking earlier about the seed treatments that farmers are using. There's quite a few beans that are treated, but certainly not all. Are you seeing those seed treatments pretty effective at controlling the bean leaf beetles?
Well, yeah, the early season or overwintering population of the bean leaf beetles can be managed pretty effectively with the seed treatments, especially in those areas of the state, which typically are in the southeast where the overwintering populations are a little bit larger. A lot of times we see large populations in reports down in that area, and we can really see a difference between the untreated versus the treated seed when we see those seedlings and how much feeding we actually start observing on those plants. So it can make a big difference.
Now, Jeff was mentioning too, and I would say the same thing, that I've certainly seen them come out of alfalfa fields real early in the season, but I've never had a complaint in an alfalfa field. Do you ever see much feeding there, or are they kind of just getting by for a little bit until they have some soybeans to eat?
In South Dakota, I very rarely, when I'm out scouting alfalfa, see the bean leaf beetles out there. I think one of our things that's a little bit different than Kansas is by the time we start greening up, some years, just depending on the season we're having, beans might be emerging about 1 or 2 weeks, just a little bit behind. And so, our biggest issue in alfalfa are alfalfa weevils, and we don't focus too much on the bean leaf beetles that might be out there.
You know, when you're out scouting those fields early with bean leaf beetles are a decent size insect. You can find them. I know they don't always want to hang out when you're there. They kind of drop a lot of times to the ground. Do you notice other things we should be watching for when we're scouting at that time for bean leaf beetles?
Well, in the last couple of years, another thing we need to watch for early season now is the soybean gall midge. And so the type of injury we're looking for is very different, where the bean leaf beetles are causing defoliation on the leaves. The soybean gall midge will actually cause the plant to wilt, become discolored, and essentially die over time. And so those are attacking the stem versus the leaves. But we've been scouting now the last 2 years. As soon as we're out looking for bean leaf beetles, we're also watching the base of the plants for soybean gall midge as well.
How far has that problem spread across the state? Are you finding it across much of the eastern half of South Dakota?
For the soybean gall midge, we found it in quite a few counties in the last 2 years. This year will be a little bit more difficult due to the pandemic to get out there and do some scouting in those fields. But one of the things we notice is it doesn't seem like it makes a difference north to south, except for the time that it shows up in the field. So the southeast gets hit much earlier in the season, but as we move north, the infestations still occur. They just take a little bit longer before they become apparent. And also a lot of times as we get into the northern parts of South Dakota, they don't appear to cause a lot of yield loss when compared to what we see down in the southeast.
Talking with Adam Varenhorst with South Dakota State University. Adam, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Stay safe this spring.
Yep, you too. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Talking about insects in soybeans, specifically we're starting the topic off with bean leaf beetles, but we're certainly open to any agronomic questions you have if you want to give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG.
We interrupt this message for an important announcement. In these uncertain times, many farmers are looking to prolong their grain storage. That's why FarmShop MFG is offering a $12.50 credit per germinator towards the purchase of a Grain Temp Guard Alarm DT, up to $200 per unit. Protect last year's crop and start 2020 off right. Go to FarmShopMFG.com to order today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep. Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Imagine the perfect flow of grain from the field to the bin. Imagine a single rotor that ensures both quality and productivity. An advanced system that optimizes harvest settings on the go. You don't have to imagine. With features like AFS Harvest Command, an axial flow combine from Case IH always delivers the perfect flow for your operation. Find out how. Talk to your Case IH dealer today.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. We are live in the Morton studio today. If you've got a question for us, just give us a call here, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We're going to get back to the Ag PhD mailbag in just a second here, but before we do, I just wanted to talk a little bit more about bean leaf beetles. Prior to, I don't know what it was, about 15, 16 years ago, something like that, we had never had to spray for bean leaf beetles on our farm, not once. Starting that year, whatever it was, 15, 16 years ago, we had to spray several years in a row. And I mean, granted, insecticide is really cheap. It's $2, so it's no big deal. But if you spray too late, here's the problem. Even if you spray on time, when you see enough of them out there, they've already bitten into your plant. They already potentially have introduced diseases like bean pod mottle virus or caused other issues in those beans. And you can see those symptoms all the way through the season. And yes, it might not be enormous yield loss, but a lot of times it's something. The other side of it is, what's the seed quality? Now, we raise a lot of our beans for seed, and we want them to look fantastic. They don't look fantastic when bean leaf beetles feed on them early in the season or late in the season. So I would really encourage you, get these things under control. Now, the other side of this is seed treatments. So a few years ago, we started using seed treatments, and wow, that made a difference with the early season bean leaf beetles. Now, bean leaf beetles don't move far. So usually if you stop them early, then you don't have a flush later on, or at least your flush later on is much, much, much less. So use the seed treatment with bean leaf beetles. This is one of the big advantages you get. I would also tell you, like the seed treatment we use on our farm, we actually have up to 2 free resprays of insecticide later on in the season. So if bean leaf beetles happen to show up at threshold levels later, we get free insecticide to spray because of the seed treatment that we bought. So we spent about $15 on our seed treatment, get like 38 components to that seed treatment. It's pretty awesome. And it only costs around $15. But anyway, I would just tell you, with bean leaf beetles, you got to scout right at emergence with soybeans. And then it's later in the season at some point. It all depends on where you live because it's based on heat units. All bugs, it's based on heat units. So if we have what I believe is going to be a warmer, drier year than last year, we are going to see bugs show up earlier than they would have last year and maybe in what you might consider a normal year. So I'm just trying to tell you, whenever you have a warmer year, be scouting just a little bit on the earlier side, literally for everything, not just for weeds, but for insects too, because insects, like I say, are really based on when they emerge, when they hatch, when, you know, how quickly they develop, that's all based on heat. With bean leaf beetle control, if you need to spray an insecticide, the cheap pyrethroids are great. So even the lower rates, great. Lorsban, just fine. I mean, a lot of insecticides out there will do a pretty good job. So I don't get too worried about that end of things. The other thing, or I guess the last thing that I will say is with bean leaf beetles, I don't care what color they are. I don't care how many spots there are in the on their backs. What you're looking for is a triangle. It's a little triangular black spot right behind their neck. If you see that, you have bean leaf beetles. If you do not see that, you have a different bug. It's probably an adult corn rootworm beetle or who knows. I mean, there are lots of other beetles out there. But the point is, bean leaf beetle is the only one that has this triangular black spot on its back right behind its neck. If you see that, you've got bean leaf beetles. All right, Darren, anything to add to bean leaf beetles? No, I shut Darren's mic up. He was shuffling through all the papers.
Right. Nope, let's dive into the mailbag.
Okay, well, before we do that, though, we're going to get back to the phone lines. We've got Gordon calling in from Michigan. Gordon, how are you today?
Good. Good afternoon.
So what can we do for you?
A week or two ago, I thought I heard you guys mention that for pre-emergence herbicides, you're using a water carry of maybe as low as 5 or 6 gallons per acre.
Did I hear that right? Yep, we've done as low as 3 in the past.
Okay.
For pre-emerge.
Obviously, you're comfortable with that.
Well, it depends. Now, if you've got a whole bunch of cover out there, I'd say it's probably different. Like, let's say you've got a cover crop and it's big and there's a lot of residue out in the field, then you may need a little bit more to get great coverage. If you've got a clean black field, you may need a little bit less. You just have to see what kind of tips you can use and how you can deliver a nice even coat across the field.
So what's your situation? You just trying to get by with a little bit less water going out as a carrier?
Yeah, just match it up better with acres or sure. A tank load of spray, you know, that kind of stuff.
What have you been running?
I've been running primarily 10 gallons.
And, sure.
Just because I thought that was what was necessary, but it sounds like maybe it's not so much.
No, it's not. So is your situation like no cover crop, just bare ground, you're going out and spraying?
Yeah.
Yep.
How about if you're incorporating it? Does that make a difference?
Not really. I don't really care. Okay. I would just say this. When we've gone as low as 3 gallons, it's worked just fine. But then we're upping the spray pressure and we're using smaller droplets. So
okay.
The whole thing is we still want fairly decent coverage. And I would tell you it's probably a little more important when you are not incorporating to have better coverage. But either way, we want as good a coverage as we can get. It's just, you know, you got to think about when we have plants out there and you're spraying stuff post-emerge, we're not just spraying something that's level. All of a sudden, it's now three-dimensional. So we do need a lot more water and just better coverage overall. It's much easier to obtain that when you're spraying pre-emerge. So, yeah, I have no problem if you want to cut her back to 5 gallons or 7 gallons or 8 or whatever you want for your situation. I'm not worried about it.
I think that low rate would also apply for glyphosate as well. Typically, you don't need real high gallonage for that either. So.
Yep, that's correct. Now, the thing with the glyphosate to keep in mind is for some of these people that are really worried that, oh, man, I got to have an enormously huge droplet because I'm worried about drifting. And I'm not saying don't worry about drift, but I am saying, like, here where we farm, we have some enormous fields, and I might be a quarter mile or a half mile away from a neighbor when I'm spraying, so I don't really care. I'm not worried that Roundup isn't going to move that far anyway. All I'm getting at here is if you have really big spray droplets and you're only going 3 gallons or 5 gallons of water, now that's where we start to see problems. So we still have to be thinking about coverage. And the less water you have, typically that means the smaller your spray droplet needs to be or you're going to sacrifice coverage.
Right. You mentioned pressure at the lower volume rate. What pressure did you like to be at?
We've run as high as 80 pounds of pressure when we're at 3 gallons, but usually we're talking 40 to 60 pounds of pressure.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's very, very helpful. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Yeah. Thanks, Gordon. Appreciate it. And have a good spring.
You too. Bye.
Yeah, we do get that question a lot about the carrier volume. I would also throw in there are different types of carriers. So, for example, like in our farm, we like to spray a lot of stuff in March when the ground is frozen in the morning, thawing in the afternoons, works phenomenally well. We get the work done early in the season. Well, then we can't use water because a lot of times it's below freezing when we're spraying. So we have to use liquid 28%. So we prevent any freezing, and that works just fine. And it's the same thing there. I don't mind going 3 gallons, 5 gallons, whatever. It's just we're putting fertilizer on at the same time. So then a lot of times we are going 10, 20 gallons. But even with the 28%, we've dropped as low as 3 or 5 or 7 gallons. No big deal. All right, let's get back to the mailbag questions. What you got there, Darren?
All right, Tom from Oregon asked, can calcium carbonate or any kind of calcium product be applied to the soil with 1-inch tall growing corn?
So lime, when the corn is growing.
Never done that. We've always waited. Since we're putting on so many pounds, we've always waited to do that.
Yeah, I don't know why that would cause a problem, but by the same token, I want to get as good a coverage on the soil as I can rather than having it get hung up in the plant. Plus, if I have that out there, and now I've just put more calcium that's potentially landed on the leaves, what I would worry about is if I go spray something, my spray is going to get tied up with that calcium. So I don't love the idea. If you're going to try it, do it on a small scale and do it a couple weeks before you're going to spray anything.
All right, hope that helps, Tom. Really appreciate the question. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Ag PhD Radio.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Challenging field conditions often make harvest difficult. Can your corn head handle it? The GTS X10 corn head from Agra US is a rugged, cost-effective alternative to heavier, more traditional heads. Constructed of durable yet lightweight aluminum, the X10 puts less strain on your combine without losing harvest effectiveness. And it is 40% lighter than traditional heads, reducing field compaction in those less than ideal conditions. For more information, give us a call at 833-4-AGRA-US.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
I've got an axe to grind. I hate bromes. Brome grasses can be brutal on winter wheat yields. If you really want to give winter wheat a fighting chance, be brutal right back with Prepare Burn Down Herbicide. Adding Prepare to your glyphosate extends brome control for up to 21 days, giving young wheat the weed-free head start it needs to make something of itself. Because the cleaner the field, the higher the yield. Talk to your retailer or visit preparewinterwheat.com and always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, and we're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time. Brian, these are two soil tests from Steve in New York. The first one on the top is where he's going to put soybeans, and the second one is where he wants to put some annual or perennial ryegrass. Just wondering what you think. He said he's applied some poultry, hog manure, poultry manure and hog manure, and 1 ton of high mag lime back in 2019, and trying to build things up.
Okay, let's start with this first test. So I would just say do I have all the information that I'm looking for here? I don't think so.
Is it a front and back, or is it just
no, it's just the front. But okay, so let's start with this. Yes, I have readings here for phosphorus, potassium, calcium, magnesium. I also have soil pH, iron, manganese, zinc, aluminum. I've got percent of organic matter. What I don't have is any of the base saturation numbers. What I don't have is a couple more micronutrients that are super important for soybeans. For example, copper and boron, also molybdenum. And I don't have sulfur, another really important nutrient. Now, when I look at this, the first thing that I would say is phosphorus, there's 7 pounds. That's not even close to what we need. Potassium, 125 pounds, not even close to what we need. So those two nutrients, for sure we need more. Zinc, you've only got 1.5 pounds per acre. Absolutely need more there. Manganese is on the low side at 22 pounds. And, you know, the pH is just right. It's 6.3. So I like that. But I would just like to see a more complete soil test, and I can give you some more answers. But just looking at it, you got to fertilize with P and K. I don't know about sulfur and some of these micronutrients that I'm missing, and you're definitely going to need a little bit of zinc. Okay, then on the other one, what was the deal on the second one, Darren? The first one he wanted to plant
beans. Soybeans, and the other one is he wants to go either annual or perennial ryegrass on that field.
Oh, okay. Our recommendations don't change a crazy amount between the perennial ryegrass and the soybeans. The only big difference would be nitrogen, obviously, that you're going to need for the ryegrass, and I'm sure you know what you're doing there. But here again, I just say the P and K are really low, and the zinc is really, really low, 0.6 pounds. Here's the other thing that I want you to think about. I just mentioned P and K and zinc. When we talk about those three nutrients, especially the phosphorus and the zinc, they don't move well in soil. So when you're going to put a perennial crop down, we'd encourage you to consider putting down maybe 3 years' worth of P and K and zinc and get it down into the ground where it's safe from erosion. You're not going to lose phosphorus and zinc out of your field due to leaching. I don't care how much rain you get. Where you're going to lose it is if you lose soil. So if you get it down into the ground, then it's pretty safe. It's going to be down in that root zone, and you're going to get use out of that from your crop for a few years. That's the whole point, because it's just like earlier in the show today, we were talking to a guy who was no-tilling. He put phosphorus, laid it on the soil surface. I hate that. And I'm not saying he's a bad farmer or, you know, he's done something that's horribly wrong. But what I hate is, for me on the farm, it's tough right now economically. So if I spend $20 or $50 on fertilizer, I'd like to get that $20 or $50 out of my fertilizer sometime soon, not in and definitely in my lifetime. Well, with phosphorus, if you lay it on the soil surface, it's possible you might not get it in your lifetime. Now, I'm probably going way overboard there, but all I'm saying is, if you lay phosphorus on the soil surface, let's say 2 years into this perennial ryegrass crop that you're raising, is it going to get down and used by the crop very well over time? No, it's not. So go out and soil test, and you'll find that there's going to be a really high level of phosphorus in your top 1 inch for a really long time. And I'm just saying, we can better utilize our fertilizer investment. You'll get more net tonnage out of the dollars you spent in this first 3 to 5 years if you just put the P and the K and the zinc down in the ground at a good strong rate, and you're in good shape. Because yeah, your soil is really low. I mean, really low on P, K, and zinc. It's almost negligible how little fertilizer there is right there of those three nutrients.
Hey, thanks for the question, Stephen. Really appreciate that. Let's get to one here from Ryan. He said, you were talking about the three pre's and using a yellow as part of that. There's a product I've found called Linex and or Lorox. It's a group 4, I believe. Do you know anything about them, and could they be used in a similar manner as the yellows?
Well, They could, but they're much more expensive. They're a little harder on the crop, and I don't think they're as good in terms of killing the weeds. So you just don't want to do it. Let's just leave it at that.
All right. Thanks. Really appreciate that, Ryan. A couple of questions here, Brian, based on gibberellic acid. So one from...
based on gibberellic acid or about gibberellic acid?
About gibberellic acid here. Robert in New Zealand says, I'm looking at spraying some gibberellic acid on some corn, just wondering what the optimum rate you would spray it at is. And then another question from Josh. He said, in a recent episode, you were talking about absolutely putting some Rise Up Smart Grass on your silage corn. I'm just curious if you had any more information in terms of rates, timing, and so forth.
Okay, so let's start with this. I don't know what kind of gibberellic acid he's getting in New Zealand. What we use on our farm is this product called Rise Up Smart Grass that is made by Valent. If I remember right off the top of my head, that's 40%.
40%,
yeah. Yeah, 40% gibberellic acid. Okay, the rate we're using is 0.3 to 0.6 ounces. Now, we just planted some silage corn at the end of last week, and I knew that we had this week coming up. So it was super warm last week. Our soil temps were hitting 70 almost every day last week. So it was great. Okay, but the problem is this week is going to be cold. I hate that for silage corn. That's terrible for silage corn and terrible for tonnage. So what we want to do is once that crop gets up, let's call it the V3 stage or so, V3, V4, somewhere in there, I'd like to hit it with, I'm probably going to go now, 0.6 ounces of Rise Up. Normally, we might just go 0.4 or 0.5 ounces of Rise Up. So anyway, that's the rate. When you want to spray is when the daytime temps are in the 50s and 60s. Somewhere in that V3 to V6 kind of range. I'm not a big fan of this on grain corn. We haven't found yet that it helps us on the grain corn, but it definitely helps us on the silage corn produce more tonnage, and it helps in the spring and in the fall on pasture ground.
All right. Thanks for those questions. Really appreciate that. Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got James with us down in Georgia. James, how are you doing today?
Doing good. I got a question for you.
Fire away.
I'm side dressing corn with urea, 125 units and 70 units of potash and 20 pounds of sulfur, and it's 90 degrees and it's under a pivot. How much water would you put on it to try to keep it from volatilizing?
I would put between at you got to be at least half an inch, and I'd probably prefer an inch, but half an inch, and yep. That way you can get across it with a pivot faster, because you don't have a lot of time. You basically have 48 hours, and you got to get that urea down. I'm not worried about the potash or the sulfur. I am worried about the urea.
48 hours, and it'll do what?
You're going to start losing it up in the air.
Do you have any idea how fast it will leach?
How fast it will leach?
How much you'll start losing.
Oh, how much you lose?
Losing.
Yeah. Yeah, it depends a lot on heat. So when you're from Georgia,
it's hot and sunny.
I'm very familiar with your conditions. Right. Yeah, you got
90 degrees.
Yep, yeah, you got a lot more risk than I do. Let's just put it that way, James. I'm in a cold part of the country.
All right, so what about the safener, Brian? So a lot of guys will say, well, I'll just put a safener on seed to reduce volatility.
Not seed. No, we're talking urea.
Not seed, urea.
And in terms of using a stabilizer, you can, but his point is he's got irrigation. So why waste the money on a volatilization product? You can just, as long as you can get across it with that pivot in 48 hours, you're going to lose almost nothing. So that's what I would get done.
Okay.
And like I say, to make it go fast, I'd cut her down to about half an inch. So they say a quarter inch is the absolute bare minimum, but I prefer to see a half inch on it, and then I feel pretty safe.
Okay.
All right. Well,
that's
hey, thanks.
What I'm doing. I was just going. That's what I'm doing. I didn't know, but I wanted to verify.
Yep. It's always good to verify. You bet. Thanks,
keep
James.
Keep those
appreciate
pivots
it.
Running, James. Yeah, it is really a nice tool to have irrigation to get a lot of things going. I know a lot of farmers planting into some drier soils right now. Wish they had irrigation just to get that seed to start as well. Thanks for listening to our show today. Had fun talking about insects already, like bean leaf beetles, with seed treatments, as you heard today. You can get them under control quite well. Thanks for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.